Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Did you catch season 3 of This Is Digital? Season 3 of This Is Digital goes behind the scenes to reveal how digital trends show up in everyday decisions and actions, including digital lessons from the EV revolution and the chief digital officer's role in disruption and culture, featuring guests like Ekta Chopra of Elf Beauty and Tyson Jomini of JD Power. Do you have a digital mindset? Find out by checking out the latest and greatest on season 3 of This Is Digital and learn more at westmonroe.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Special. I am your host, Thor Nystrom. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Eric Edholm of NFL.com to discuss this year's tight end class. You can find Eric on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Eric, we are now less than 1 month away from the start of the NFL draft. Are you ready to talk about this year's tight end class?
What if I say no? What, honestly, were you prepared for that answer? I think the answer is yes. But yeah, just saying. Be ready for anything with me on the air, man.
Oh, I always am. And let's jump right into it with our top five tight ends. At least what you told me, your tight end five, that you have a tie. I don't know if you've broken that tie overnight with the sleep, but you break it down for the folks where you landed there.
Yeah, I think I believe my tie at five was Sam Laporta and I think Tucker Kraft. Is that who I had tied for fifth?
Correct.
All right, good. All right, yeah. So two kind of different guys, right? I mean, Laporta's your sort of classic H-back, great receiving chops that weren't always shown off in the offense in which he played, which was three handoffs and a punt kind of offense. Not to rub it in there, buddy. I see what hat you're wearing there. But yeah, it just was frustrating at times, the lack of opportunities. But there were some games, the bowl game and a few other games where you said to yourself, all right, like this guy in a featured role, not saying he's Travis Kelce, but he can do well. And Tucker Kraft, obviously, the athletic traits are very alluring, and he'll probably get drafted higher than some people are realizing it at this point right now. But, big hands, big athletic guy. I've heard some people say sort of a poor man's Freiermuth. I could sort of see that. I get it. I think he's got some base tight end ability as well. My number four tight end, are we jumping up now? Are you ready to make jump?
Let me get my response first. So I have Laporta in my rankings. I have him tight end four. Kraft for me finished just outside of the top five. But yeah, with as far as Laporta goes, I actually have him above Musgrave, which is a controversial take to some, but I love Laporta's game. Now I I'll acknowledge that for the folks that aren't watching, on the video or whatever, I'm wearing an Iowa hat to what Eric had said before. I did go to graduate school at Iowa. I have a lot of exposure to Sammy Ballgame's game, but watch a lot of Sam Laporta in college. And I love the kid's game. The context you need to know about Sam Laporta is what Eric was saying, the offensive situation he was in the last 2 years. It was absolutely brutal. You can't underscore it enough. The quarterback play was terrible. The offensive line play was dreadful. You don't associate that usually with the Iowa teams.
Correct.
But the guard and the tackle play had fallen off a shelf. 2 years ago, they had Linderbaum at center at least, but then Linderbaum leaves. So last year, then the whole offensive line stunk. They didn't have receivers either year. Like, it was really, really bad. They had Goodson the year before at running back, but then last year, the running back play dropped off a shelf too. Basically, Laporta, he was a marked man every single game. and they were force feeding him targets, and he was succeeding anyway. He's got solid ball skills, but truly where he succeeds, he's a very sudden mover, a shockingly sudden mover, both in the routes, but then also when he has the ball in his hands, he sort of becomes this bull in a china shop. He can make you miss, but then he can also he's like a street brawler once he has the ball in his, like, he's not going down until, like, you know, it's like three guys hanging off of him or whatever. He's going to fight you to the bitter end. And then it was very encouraging when he goes to the combine. You wanted to see how he tested, because Eric, you were mentioning sort of the frame. He measures in at, was it
6'2", 6'3"? Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was like 6'3" and 3/8", 245. So he really needed to test well. And boy, did he, a 9.48 RAS, and he did the full complement of tests. He didn't duck any of them. His three cone was 93rd percentile, shuttle was 86th percentile, the broad jump 93rd percentile, vertical was 82nd percentile. Then he runs the 4.59 40-yard dash. So anyhow, I'm a big fan of his game. Eric, let's move to your tight end four.
Yeah, tight end four, I've got the aforementioned Luke Musgrave, and I mean, there's a lot to like about him. I mean, there are a lot of things that you can look at and say, there's certainly a player here. There's certainly something to build around, to develop. The first of all, the frame is very impressive. 6'6", 33-inch arms, big hands. Saw him at the Senior Bowl up close and said, wow, okay, that's a big man's hands. He didn't run the high 4.4, low 4.5 time that Jim Nagy was predicting and some other people were saying. I'm telling you, this guy can move. So it wasn't quite the shocking workout at the combine that I think some people came in expecting. That didn't really bother me that much. I mean, he's still vertical jump like 36 inches. I mean, this guy is a pretty freaky athlete for his size. I think there's still some refinement needed in his games. I mean, he's loose enough to play at that size and be kind of a down the middle target, if you will, and even some deep shots too. I mean, there's some corner routes, which you don't normally see, you know, tight ends run or whatever, but the injury situation, not playing a whole lot, probably lacking a little bit of strength and bulk, I think are things that, you know, if you're going to be that inline tight end, which you typically are at that size, you want to play the Gronk role. I think he needs to get stronger. He just wasn't as refined and finished a product as I was hoping for when watching him. But again, I think he's got all the traits and the right sort of play style and demeanor to make it in this league. I just think there are enough pitfalls to put him fourth on this list, and a good tight end class too. So it's not really a knock in my opinion, but you seem to have some reservations with him.
Yeah. You set that up very well. And we're contractually obligated to mention that he has NFL bloodlines, of course.
Correct. Yes. How could I forget?
the nephew of former NFL quarterback, Bill Musgrave, but you set it up really well. You have all the athletic traits that you would want in the package that you want. You have all that. And we had the moments on tape. You have the flash plays and stuff like that. And you see the fluidity. You see the ball skills. He gets downfield better than most when he's on the field. The problem is he wasn't on the field very much.
Yeah.
He only had 13 starts over his entire career. And he only caught 47 balls over his career. Now, this past season, that was supposed to be the breakout campaign, right? Like, you know, I mean, like all of us college football fans over the summer, it's like, this is, you know, we've been waiting for this. Now it's when Musgrave's going to blow up or whatever. And then he suffers another injury, right? And then his season just gets wrecked. And so, I mean, all the other stuff that you were talking about, it still applies. And he proved the concept of the athleticism. And, you know, while you were mentioning he didn't like blow the roof off the combine, but it was still very, very solid.
Very good.
97th percentile.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty good. The speed score was elite. The explosion grade was elite. Where he was a little bit less, the agility scores were just good, you know, on the RAS card or whatever. But, you know, prove the concept of that. And I would say that the Senior Bowl, he was good, not great.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, he was very solid there, but, you know, not perfect there either. But with Musgrave, the reason I'm just a little bit lower on him is you're taking a bit more of a chance there. Right. Yep. You have to trust both your conviction in the projection, but also your coaching staff to you know, sort of polish the gem there and polish, you know, the rough edges and stuff like that. So that's why I have him. Musgrave is my tight end five. I have him just one spot below Laporta for that reason. Eric, we've had some disagreements to this point. Our tight end three, though, is the same. Why don't you tell the people who that is?
Yeah, dark, one of the few really like straight, a big amount taller than I am, Darnell Washington. I mean, 6 foot seven, 264 pounds, heavier than I am too. I'm very excited about that part. But you know, when you see this guy up close, you say to yourself, I mean, why not just make him an offensive tackle at this point, right? Like one with, you know, 35 inch arms or 34 and a half, maybe it was. And these massive hands, we talk about how big Musgrave's hands are. I think Washington's are bigger off memory. And so, you know, he got everyone excited with the red zone drill at the combine, that rep where he did at the end, the one handed catch. And that's great. I still would like to see a little bit more consistency catching the football. You still see him kind of starting to run before he grabs it, or just little concentration drops, I should say. It's tough because how many targets did he get last year? 46 or something? I don't know what the number is, but I'm, you know, when you play in an offense with Brock Bowers and a healthy run game and a quarterback who can run a little bit too, it's tough. You're the second tight end, so the options weren't necessarily there for him, but, you know, turn on, I think it was the I don't remember if it was the South Carolina game. There was one game where they kind of featured him, a little Missouri game too, for that matter. My alma mater, since we're digging on your graduate school a little bit.
Let's not get into Missouri and Kansas on this episode.
Oh, right? Yeah, no, this could go way long, way ugly, way everything. But I don't know, Thor, there's just something pretty exciting about him. I keep trying to tell myself, don't fall in love with the measurables. Don't fall in love with the measurables, because we've seen these Sequoia-like tight ends before. And honestly, not a ton of them have worked out. But, you know, if you look at the guy who's sort of lasted the longest at the position currently in the league, who seems to get a job no matter what, especially as long as Aaron Rodgers is there, it's Mercedes Lewis. And I thought somebody made that comp early last college football season, and maybe even before that. And I thought, I see no reason to get away from that, because, you know, early in his career, Mercedes was a receiver and then he became a blocker. And I think that's how it's going to go with Washington, even if he's going to be asked to block quite a bit right away for whatever team that drafts him.
Yeah, you set that up really, really well. You know, it's the guy, he's almost 6'7". He's going to play. The weigh-in was 264, but he's going to play over 270. I think he had even said that he played games at over 280. And like, crazy. You mentioned, he's not going to bust as a tight end, but if he did, you're literally right. You have another bullet, because you can just try him at offensive tackle and he can succeed there. You could literally put 20 pounds on him very, very easily. He has this massive frame. It would support it. And like, you have this dichotomy here where it's sort of like, you know, eye of the beholder, depending on how you want to value him. On the one side of it, you have that huge dual threat utility in this league where it's moving towards more 12 personnel, multiplicity, yep, and different stuff like that. And then you get the boxes thinned out, and you start to think about, you have this guy who's basically a third offensive tackle, who's by far the most dominant run blocking tight end in this class. And then against the thin boxes, he's going to be a running back's best friend, because he's just going to road grade those thin boxes or whatever. So you have that stuff. And then he should be, you know, like on his best reps, he's absolutely a very reliable intermediate guy. But you have to mention the career drop rate, especially in conjunction with a couple different things. Number one, he wasn't a downfield guy whatsoever in college. You mentioned that the context of Brock Bowers, but, you know, he did the downfield utility. But that being said, Darnell Washington, I believe, only had it was either two or three. Only three catches his entire career that came 20 yards or more downfield over three seasons. The other thing is, Darnell Washington, you think about him as this big colossus guy, but he doesn't break tackles. Over his entire career, Darnell Washington had 14 missed tackles. That's less than both Dalton Kincaid and Michael Mayer had last season alone. Wow. So you don't have that thing either. And then you mentioned the drop rate. Darnell Washington's career drop rate was 10%. Yeah. That's like the red flag alarm level when you're in the double digits. I will say, I'll give him the credit that he had dropped that to 6.7 by last year. Yep. So if he can keep it in that range in the NFL, he's going to be fine. But Darnell Washington, he's the intermediate safety blanket guy. And again, he has not broken a lot of tackles to this point in his career. He's never proven that he could be the downfield guy. So he must be reliable in the intermediate area. It is not an option for him to drop 10% of his back, or even 8 or 9%. He has to be at that 6% or lower range in the NFL because of where all of his usage is going to come as a receiver. The blocking stuff and all that stuff, that is a given. He is a dominant run blocker. He gives you effort there. Tredavious Tomlinson or whatever in the national title game, when Darnell Washington was blocking him downfield, he had like 100 discrepancy on him. Never wants to see him again. Darnell Washington does that stuff too. It's not just wiping out the edges and stuff like that and dealing with those guys. He'll go downfield, when there's the extended plays down there, and he'll start picking off people downfield. At the cornerbacks and the safeties, their eyes get as big as saucers seeing that guy running downfield. They're like, oh my gosh, this alien is coming after me. I need to hide. But like, there are some of those things in the eval that you have to discuss. And before we get on to our top two tight ends, Eric, I have to discuss something. I wanted to bring up, we at Fantasy Pros, we have partnered with the FFPC to bring you guys a $350 entry to a season-long fantasy football contest with $6 million in total prizes, including $1 million to first place. Drafts are open today. Sign up at fantasypros.com/championship and use promo code FantasyPros for $25 off your entry. Enter the contest before June 1st and draft your team before June 15th for an additional early bird credit of $35. Each 12-team league consists of a 12-week regular season with weekly waiver wire periods and start-sit decisions, but no trades. The top two regular season seeds, along with the league playoff champion, move on to the championship rounds in weeks 15 through 17, where they'll compete for the $1 million grand prize. Users can also win free Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros subscriptions as part of the prizing. Again, that's fantasypros.com/championship and use promo code FantasyPros for $25 off your entry. All right, Eric, let's get into the top two guys. Everybody has the same top two. They're in different orders for different folks, depending on what they prefer. Who is your tight end two, Eric?
Yeah, I've got Michael Mayer number two, and that's no knock on him. And it very well could flip if we get updated information injury-wise on my number one. But to me, Michael Mayer is going to be your – and I got to be careful with comps because I know people take them very literally, right? When you compare a player, they say, oh, you mean he's going to have the same career as that guy? Of course not, right? But he's Jason Witten in the sense that he is Mr. Reliable. He is going to be your meat and potatoes blocker. He's a good athlete, not a great one, but a good one. And able to get open, separate, you know, just enough, right? I don't think he needs a ton of room. I don't know that he's quite as slow as we remember Jason Witten being at the end of his career, right? I'm talking about first, second, third year of his career when he was, you know, when Bill Parcells had that 12 personnel thing going down there. I think that's the best way to use him. He's an inline guy who is not a dominant blocker, but a very solid, functional one. And to me, there just aren't that many dominant blocking tight ends in the league anyway. So he will be an upgrade over almost anybody who comes in. Again, I think good athletic traits, but he's just a really good football player and, has the enough strength to get through as a blocker and as a tackle breaker, if you will. I don't think it's going to be very frequent, though. He's just more of your station-to-station receiver who I think can catch 60 balls in a career type season for 700 yards and six touchdowns. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's just going to be that guy for 8 years who is, really efficient and really solid across the board.
Yeah. You know, and I should say first, Michael Mayer is also my TE2, but it's very, very close. And I want to bring up something about just the idea of a job like Eric and I have, where we're not doing this for a team. We don't have a scheme,
correct? Right?
Like, it's not a specific thing. If for instance, we were doing this for a team and we needed more of an inline guy and there was more of a run ethos on that team that we were drafting for, and we were drafting the tight end in the first round, then I think each of us would lean Mayer. That's how close it is. But if we wanted the receiving guy, he was going to play more in the slot predominantly, then it would be Dalton Kincaid for sure.
So
both of us are going to have Dalton Kincaid TE1, but it, like, when people do, like the draft analysts, whatever, when we put out our board, it's not specific for those things. We have to sort of, just do it with a vacuum of context in that way.
So, absolutely.
I just wanted to say that point because I think sometimes people miss that. But, as far as Mayer goes, he's so rock solid in everything that he can control. The one thing that he can't control, there are some of those athletic limitations that you were talking about. He's a 75th percentile athlete. You know, he ran a 4.7 flat. That certainly isn't negating whatsoever. It's what TJ Hawkinson ran at the combine. Michael Mayer, his agility scores is where he sort of struggled. 49th percentile shuttle, 49th yep. percentile, also three cone or whatever. But, you know, like on the field, like what you love about him, he gives effort as a blocker, including as the inline. Watch it, you know, when you're going back watching his film, a lot of these tight ends, when you're going through and watching the film, they're either not giving effort as a blocker or they don't have like the strength for it, whatever. What you liked or appreciated when you were going back and watching the cutups of you know, the cutups, it's like bang, 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 bang. You see every play. It's like bang, 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 bang. Over, you know, you can knock out a game in like 5 minutes, whatever. And with Mayer, it's effort on every single play.
Absolutely.
And that shouldn't be something that is noteworthy, but it is. He brings the lunch pail every single time. And then, you know, as far as the on-field utility as a receiver, that his special sauce, it's catching the ball in traffic. I mean, it's sort of ball skills overall, but this kid, it's hard to go back like the last decade and think of like analogous guys in traffic. Like Michael Mayer, I was talking about the Mark Mann thing earlier. This past season, especially on Notre Dame, Michael Mayer was the marked man. They had a little bit of talent in the running back room, but no singular talent. They didn't have any talent in the receiving room. And then they were down to their second quarterback, Drew Pine, this noodle arm scrambler kid. And they were just forcing targets to Michael Mayer. The defense knew it was coming. Michael Mayer doesn't have the speed or burst to get downfield. So it's all in the intermediate area. So there's traffic all around him. People were coming through his back. They were hanging on his back. You know, it was like, you know, there's three guys on him and Michael Mayer's like pinning him to his back, catching the ball with one arm. Like there was some really ridiculous things going on in the intermediate area, and his contested catch numbers, they speak for himself and they're absolutely ridiculous. Easily led the class last year, 17 contested catches. He goes 17 of 26 last year in those contested catch scenarios. So not only was he forced into more of them just because of the force fed situation that he was in, he kept converting those plays. So I like that stuff. The you know, as far as the downfield utility, you're not going to get as much of that because of the athletic limitations. He's also not going to give you the enormous yak stuff afterwards for the same reason. It's sort of like the Jack Smith and Jigba thing, but Michael Mayer, he is that sort of berserker guy after the catch where it is tough to get him down. You know, he is going to muscle through you and make you work for it.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the tight end one for both of us, Eric, and talk a little Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah. The injury stuff is concerning. The fact that I give him a ton of credit. First of all, he suffers the injury against, I believe, Colorado at the end of the season, then plays in the Pac-12 championship game, you know, plays well for a healthy person. I think he had four catches or whatever for 50 yards, but you know, the fact that he gutted through that and is still recovering, non-surgical too. Like, let's point that out. It's not like he had a procedure and is recuperating from that and rehabbing and stuff. No, he was resting and still unable to perform because of this lumbar back thing that he has, a little compression or whatever.
The little fracture, right?
The fracture. I'm sorry, not fracture. Compression. I take that back. You're correct. Yep.
Yeah.
I had a list of injuries yesterday. I was kind of going down the list, like which ones do I need to check on? Getting a little foggy on who had.
Eric and I are not doctors, and we did not stay in a Holiday Inn Express last
Thank
night.
God. I know, right? I go upstairs. My wife is the medical expert in the family, so I always get her out like, honey, what does this mean? You know, but yeah, so it really is the one thing that kind of holds me back. I mean, as I watch Travis Kelce have another dominant season, again, I'm not comparing the guys, but in terms of play style, usage, role, whatever you want to say, as I watch Kelce, because he was on both my fantasy squads and won both, can't avoid the guy anyway, right? As they ran up to the Super Bowl, I just thought this is how I would use Dalton Kincaid. I don't know that it's going to be Kelce level production. I don't know if it's Mark Andrews level production. I don't know what exactly he'll give you, but to me, that's the role. You know, you can send him on vertical shots. You can bring him on return routes. He can run laterally on routes too. He ran an over route last year that I saw. You know what I mean? It's stuff that you don't normally expect. So is it tough not having a workout numbers on him? Yes. Is it concerning that this injury thing is hanging over his head? Yeah. Are there some people who are going to sort of scoff at the idea that maybe this guy isn't quite as good? You know, he was a walk-on at University of San Diego, you know, before he got to Utah. But I think he's a hard worker.
And Eric became an FCS All-American there.
as a sophomore. Right. Yeah. Went from nowhere to become a really good player there, makes the jump, looks the part. Look, I mean, he's not as, like you were talking about the contested catches with Mayer. He's not as good in those situations, but he's pretty good for not a massive guy, right? For he's what, 6'4", 250 at the most, you know?
Yeah, at the combine, 246, but he'll probably play a little over 250, yep.
Yeah, right. We'd love to see him in that 250 range, I think. But he's a move guy, very fluid route runner. You're not going to ask him to crack back and block, you know, defensive ends and things like that. Maybe you could do crackbacks, but point being, he's not Mayer. He's not Washington. He is that H tight end that you were describing before, where, you know, they're more of the receiving duty guy. And, you know, the inline guy is more of the blocking duty guy. It's, so, you know, 70, 30, 30, 70, whatever that split is. He's that guy for you, I think.
That's very well said. Yeah, last year, Kincaid had 3 more catches, 81 more yards than Michael Mayer on 8 less targets. And Dalton Kincaid, an incredible 2.8% drop rate last year on incredible
big hands, too.
Putting, yep. Yeah, they were putting all the usage towards him. All right, Eric, let's dive just a little bit deeper in the few minutes that we have left. Who is a tight end in this class outside of the top 5 that you think has gotten overhyped during this process, like a fool's gold sleeper type?
Yeah, I don't know. It was tough because obviously even in a good year of tight ends, it's not like, you know, we're talking up the, you know, so many to the point where they're getting a vomitous amount of coverage. But yeah, I was a little surprised. People tell me I'm wrong on this, and it's fine. I guess I'm surprised that there's like a Davis Allen fan club out there. And he does have some explosive ability. You saw the jumping drills at the combine. He's not fast. But he's got, you know, he has a big frame, and I think there's something to like about him. But he's one of those players that if you made a cut up of all his highlights, you'd say this guy's pretty good. But when you watch the full body of work, to me, it just is lacking. I see a 5th, 6th round player at the end of the day. I don't know. I guess I'm just not convinced. Other people are saying, oh no, he could crack the top 100. Maybe I'm being a little harsh on him, but I don't think the blocking chops are there. I don't think the reliability as a receiver is there. Sometimes it looks like, you know, he has elite ball skills. Other times it looks like he can't locate the, you know, track the ball in the air very well, or he times his jumps up poorly. So I don't know if it's me feeling like there's just too big of a delta in what you get, right? The high end, the low end, or the non-competitive reps I see sometimes. And I don't know. It just wasn't, he just didn't excite me the way some people were kind of suggesting he could at the beginning of the year.
So mine is Will Mallory of Miami. I'm out on Will Mallory. For me, I am out completely. For me, he is not draftable. He will not be draftable on my board. And I say this despite the fact that he's a 93rd percentile athlete.
Good athlete,
Basically played all 5 years at Miami. But let's talk about those 5 years. He caught 115 balls during that time at Miami. Only 31 of them came beyond 9 yards downfield on 63 targets. 5 times he dropped catchable targets during that time. Let's talk about in traffic. Over his career, Mallory, 13 for 34. That's 38.2% in contested opportunities. And we should repeat, the vast majority of those opportunities came within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And that's not all, folks. He's one of the worst blockers in this entire tight end class.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what else to say. You need to manufacture touches for the kid near the line of scrimmage, and he can't block. So there's no value in that. I'm sorry, Will Mallory, you are not draftable. Eric, you have about 30 seconds for this one. Give me your favorite sleeper tight end in this class.
Yeah, I like Luke Schoonmaker a lot. I mean, he was at the East-West Shrine game, and people out there who watched him, who I talked to, I wasn't able to go. They said really good things about him. He ran much better than I think some people realized. He's sort of a hybrid. You can play him as a blocker, but you can also use him as – I think he's like the perfect complementary tight end with good size, you know, good athleticism. I would say he's not an imposing target, but it's like he almost sneaks up on people. So I like him quite a bit. Holds his blocks as best he can. He's got a pretty big frame to kind of keep things contained a little bit. So again, nothing special, but I think a darn good little football player that maybe people, for a big school, that people are overlooking a little bit. How about
my
you?
One My one for this one is Zach Kuntz of ODU. I think the only reason he's lower on people's boards is just because of the circumstance of his situation. But Zach Kuntz just tested as the 10 on the Rams system for tight end, as the most athletic tight end who's ever come into the NFL by the testing numbers. He was a former four-star tight end at Penn State, like this ballyhooed kid. He transferred out because he got stuck behind Pat Freiermuth right at the start of his career. Then there was the COVID year and everything like that where, you know, ODU didn't play, whatnot. But he was always productive when he was on the field. Zach Kuntz was 73 catches, 692 yards, and 5 touchdowns in 2021. And he was going to go ballistic at the beginning of, or, you know, this year. He was at the beginning of the year, started out really good. But then he had an injury. Zach Kuntz was knocked out for the year. I think it was late September, early October. ODU was really frisky at the beginning of the year. Once Kuntz goes down, they went into the tank and they stunk the rest of the year. There's something to be said for that. I really like Zach Kuntz. He has a lot of receiving skill as well. He's really difficult to defend when he gets down the seam, but he had only those 15 starts during his career. But he's got the recruiting pedigree. He has athleticism in spades, and he has those ball skills. I would absolutely take a chance on that kid. So he is my top sleeper in this class. Eric, this was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today. For Eric Edholm, I am Thorne Eystrom. Thank you for being with us. And tune in next week as I'm joined by another special guest for a deep dive into the offensive line class.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Digital trends show up every day in business decisions and actions. West Monroe is the number one strategic partner translating technology into financial value for companies. The This Is Digital podcast applies West Monroe's 2 decades of secrets and best practices to your business's benefit. Favorite past topics from the last 3 seasons include how AI and the next generation of employees are shaping the workplace, becoming a product company, Highmark's journey, and what does it mean to put the customer first? Learn more at westmonroe.com.